You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where
I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis, Sam Claiborne,
Mag Pooks,
and Ryan McCaffrey.
Howdy, howdy.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn. We are going to talk about the new game from the creator of Spelunky. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
No. It's
very cool. But first, Middle Earth Shadow of War. Found out it's going to have microtransactions.
I just think they're funny. They're funny. Go ahead. Tell the audience what they are.
Staple of Middle Earth lore.
Oh, yeah. The official word, the developer is Monolith. Is that correct?
Yes.
They say players can purchase loot chests, war chests, XP boosts, and bundles through the market to strengthen their army.
Ooh.
Using, you can't, you know, there's an in-game currency and then gold, which you buy with real-world money. Players have the option of purchasing gold, and it can be acquired by spending real money. Also, participating in community challenges and completing specific milestones will earn you gold as well. There's been a strong reaction from the IGN commenters, but first, give me your reaction. How do you feel about a $60 single-player game having microtransactions for not just cosmetic items?
I think the randomized loot chest is the worst part of this. That is the thing where it's like, if I want whatever it's going to be, maybe it's something cool like Aragorn's, you know, sword or something like that.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I only want that. Then do I have to like roll it a bunch?
Loot chests, man. You can't escape them anymore. They're everywhere. They're going to be everywhere, especially next year. They're already everywhere. I think, you know, you said $60 single-player game with loot chests. The operative word there for me is single-player, actually. It's not $60 because, you know, Overwatch is $60, but it has loot chests. To me, cosmetic items, whatever. You want a blue hat for your character, buy the blue hat for your character. But cosmetic items, I think, only have value in a multiplayer context. In a single-player game, it feels way grosser and makes a lot less sense than in a game like Overwatch. If you really want a legendary skin or you really want to show off in an MMO, so you buy, you know, the elephant mount or whatever.
Hopefully they're like cool things that you would want to play with and like change the game. But then again, then you're just paying for things that, you know, aren't in the game. But I think I'm not saying this is a good thing, but there is one sliver of devil's advocacy here where we all used to buy Game Shark discs to mess with our games. And we all used to buy Game Genie to augment our games. And like a lot of this is just cheating. It's like
it's XP. Just skipping parts of the game, right?
Yeah, it's like getting XP or gold, and it's like basically we did do that to third parties at one point. So it's kind of interesting, like if like GTA withheld their cheats next time and just sold them, it would be awful. But we have done that before.
I want to pick up on something Justin said, and that's single player. And for me, I'm a big proponent of, I love single player games. The older I get, the less time I want to spend playing online with other people.
Sure.
And, you know, like quality single player games have been fewer and further between overall this generation. Games as service is the mm-hmm. the way to be now. You know, Titanfall and Battlefront, and then finally we're getting campaigns attached to those sequels. But I think I don't like this at all. However, I think it's kind of a necessary evil in order to have good single player games, because all these games, the reason they're all multiplayer and games of service is so that they can have long financial tails. So if these loot boxes and loot crates are what it's going to take for us to continue to get good quality single player focused games developed,
as opposed to just a price hike?
No, as opposed to them not getting made at all and just having the publisher say,
that would be another way to do it, right? It's just
the game is just $70.
Raise the tag of the game.
Well, that's not going to happen. That's just,
no, I know. I'm saying that would solve the same problem for them.
It would, but yeah, I don't like it, but I think we just kind of have to grin and bear it for now if we want single player games.
I mean, I think again, like multiplayer games do this. You know, they do special events and double XP weekends and stuff like that to goose up their player base, because the more people that are playing a game like Overwatch, the better the experience is for everybody. There's more people to matchmake against, and just more, you need as many people in that game as possible, then they make more money, and then, you know, there's a better multiplayer experience. And in a single player context, I don't think loot boxes make any sense, and they feel a lot grosser.
But what about Borderlands? Borderlands had plenty loot boxes, right?
Well, but not this style of loot box. Okay.
What's the difference?
Also a multiplayer game.
Well, I guess, yeah.
Like, if you wanted to...
It was a single player game for me.
Yeah. Sure, and for a lot of people. But I mean, if you wanted to customize the appearance or the vocal barks or whatever of your character, there's a certain sense that you're doing that for the other people that you're going to be playing with.
Yeah, sure. The official explanation from Monolith reads, by simply engaging with the world and playing through Middle-earth Shadow of War, you earn items like gear for Talion and unique orcs for your army. These are the same items that are found in the market within loot chests and war chests. Gold merely allows you to get your hands on them immediately, cutting down some of the additional time that would have been spent winning more battles, tracking nemesis, completing quests, and assaulting fortresses. So, like, playing the game.
You win.
Just pay money to not...
Exactly.
Give us extra money and you won't to play the game.
I want to play Shadow of War, but I don't want to purchase any of these microtransactions. So I wonder, is it going to feel like it's just been padded?
That's on
like,
the designers.
Like, right? Like,
I mean, I got to figure that in a number of these cases, I don't know about Monolith specifically, but I've got to figure in a lot of cases, these decisions come down from the publisher on high, and they're told, okay, developers, put this in.
They're the ones
the developers,
paying for it, right?
Yeah, I would think the developers, a lot of cases, again, I don't work at these companies, but I got to figure it doesn't always go over well internally, but that's the business reality. So it's on the designers to implement it in as smooth and fair a way as possible.
We also, piggybacking off something you said earlier about the business side of it, it protects against used game sales. If you buy a game secondhand, the publisher gets $0, and that's different than, you know, used cars or this and that, where, you know, that's part of the card system. So now, for every copy of the game that's sold used, you know, Monolith and WB have an opportunity to at least extract a little bit of revenue out of people, because
sure.
a certain
True.
Percentage of them will buy loot boxes. And you previously couldn't do that in a single player only game.
Have you guys seen how this has been around Japan for a while, but you can buy like a randomized toy. And like you open it up,
yeah,
like
blind boxes.
Blind boxes, capsule machines.
Yeah, they do those. I mean, it's taken over the whole gambling, everything, and the collectible scene and the video game scene is pretty gross.
Yeah. So I was at Disneyland this year, and they had blind boxes for stormtrooper pins, and the people I was with really wanted this David Bowie one. It was like David Bowie stormtrooper, and like the others were not nearly as cool as that.
Yeah.
It was like the Ziggy Stardust lightning bolt. It was super cool, but like they kept dipping back into this, and I was like, how much are those? And they were like over $20. It was like something really expensive.
Wow.
And you know, and like I think both of them had spent like over $100 by the end. And they were those type of people that this like hooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that random roll, like
yeah.
there's totally an economy and a philosophy around whales and like all this stuff behind that, where like people will keep on buying things randomly to get the thing they want.
It's taken over mobile games. It's taken over a lot of stuff. You know, it used to have just a line of like 20 figures. You're into One Piece, here's these 21 piece figures, but now they're all blind boxes. And if you want the character you want, like, good luck.
What is so, whoever developed that, such a smart move
well, on their part.
Also a dick move.
Yeah, the reaction from the IGN readers on our news story was almost entirely negative. Comments saying, there's no excuse for this. Microtransactions in full-priced retail games are not okay. One guy said, okay, I'm not buying it at launch. I'll wait when it's $20 or less on PSN.
Small messaging footnote. Remember like a month ago when Monolith announced that really cool fan service thing where you'd be able to import your nemesis from Shadow of Mordor? They should have announced this loot box thing first and then come with the fan service thing to just smooth it over a little bit.
Yeah.
I will say the excuse for like the blind boxes that Sam and I were talking about is trading. I mean, the real reason is making more money, but the outward facing reason is, well, you'll collect these figures and you'll trade for the ones you want. Yep. But again, I keep coming back to the single player game thing. There's not even any economy to sort of, okay, I don't want this, but I want this, and to trade with your friends. Totally. So I don't know. It's no good.
Well, Middle-earth Shadow of War is out October 10th. I'm still, I still want to check out the game, still want to play it. I like the first game a lot, and hopefully the microtransactions don't.
There's a lot of depth to it. We actually just posted a bunch of new video on IGN. Went down just days ago, right? Yeah, and it's I don't mean to insult Assassin's Creed, but it sort of feels like a sort of more fully fleshed out, deeper Assassin's Creed, excluding Origins, because we're just sort of diving into that now. Yeah. But there's a lot going on in Shadow War. It seems really good.
Yeah,
it doesn't turn me off to it. No. I mean, I'm annoyed that like it even exists and we have to talk about it. But
yeah.
I mean, we're not going to buy them, and who cares?
That's what Damon said before. Like, we'll have to see how grindy it feels. Like, if it feels grindy, and they're like, "Hey, you loot boxes," then that's a really, really different game than if you just play it and it's not a thing you need to ever pay attention to.
Speaking of release dates, we got a release date for Horizon Zero Dawn's first expansion, The Frozen Wilds. It is out November 7th.
It's late.
Does that release date have any significance to anyone else?
Xbox One X. Hey, don't buy that console. Keep playing this cool game you already have on your PS4.
It will undoubtedly be optimized for PS4 Pro and look very gorgeous.
Game's already stunning on PS4 Pro.
If they do tune it up for Pro.
Yeah, that is the same release date as Xbox One X and Crackdown 3, of course.
It looks like Yellowstone or something. There's like these weird chemical pools.
What's
or volcanic pools? Did you see the hot springs in the image?
Maybe I didn't catch it.
It's so cool. So it's like an image of this big panoramic view of the mountains, and it's like winter. And I thought the same thing as you. Oh, it's just going to be either northern or up in the mountains or something. But then there's these those rainbow colored pools that I think are from Yellowstone.
It's really gorgeous. I mean, but it's also no different. You know, when Skyrim was first announced, we're like, so how boring, a big snowy continent, but then there's a swamp and there's other stuff. Like, I expect this to be similar to that.
I see, yeah. Obviously, Horizon is a PlayStation 4 exclusive. Do you think it's a play by Sony to sort of, like, pull some attention away from the launch of the Xbox One X?
What I do think it is, though, is if you look, like, Sony... They've got these great. They've got the third-party marketing partnership, so they've sort of got the mind share, as it were, on Battlefront 2 and on Destiny 2. But first-party wise, they've got Gran Turismo Sport, and then Uncharted is not even really holiday because it's coming out next week or the week after. It's August
this month,
so they don't really have a big first-party presence this fall. And this is a way where they can bubble back up one of their killer games from early in the year.
Yeah, that's true.
And get it some major attention during that fourth quarter and have it be kind of almost a mini, big first party game, even though it's just an expansion to an existing game.
Yeah. And I do think that they're deliberately going after Microsoft and trying to take a little bit of their thunder away. I mean, they'll probably have some Game of the Year edition, but this is, digital DLC. So it's not like, when you have to ship 8 million copies of a physical disc somewhere, like you pick your date, and then you say, okay, the game has to be finished 6 weeks before that and print the discs and get them in stores. But for this, like, they could have come out late October. They could have come out later in November, but they picked this date deliberately, I think, so that, on sites like IGN and YouTubers and Twitch streamers, you're going to see the Xbox and you're going to see Horizon side by side.
Yeah, that's true. It is coming out a little bit later than I expected.
Yeah, I think it's late.
It was late. That game came out in February, very late February. So it'll been like 10 months since its release. Yeah, 9 months. So I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting since they do have Lost Legacy coming out this month, but I do want to check it out. I've actually recently jumped back into Horizon Zero Dawn after 5 months.
Wow.
Because I got sidetracked.
Did you know where any of your stuff was or anything?
Well, there's definitely like a learning curve to relearn the combat system. Because the combat system is pretty deep. You've got melee and ranged weapons, multiple bows, different types of ammunition, elemental effects. Then you have these bombs you can use and traps you can set. And then you have your rope launcher. And then the dinosaurs, the robot dinosaurs have different like weaknesses. And then parts you can shoot off. It's like a lot to
relearn. I found by the end game the rope launcher was like a cheat code, basically.
Yep. Rope launcher is pretty great.
It's really cool.
But the game is awesome, and I'm really actually glad that I'm getting back into it, because it's definitely...
Did you get to do you know where you got, like, story spoiler-free-wise?
I'm a little bit lost in the story, because I always do, like, side quests
Can you go to the whole map, I guess is what I'm asking?
I still have Fog of War over part of the map. Okay. I guess I haven't opened up the whole map, but I'm, like, 20 hours into it.
I think the final areas of the game are the best part. I like the desert and then the final area.
So you can play that game. Like, I played that game a lot, and I put it back down and picked it back up, and I didn't even make it to the desert. Like, it's on my list of games like Damon. I want to go back to it, but I'm a little scared to try to pick it back up. Like, I think a lot of people, when they saw the screenshots or videos or watched any streams, you probably saw the early game areas, and there's way more variety in that map.
It gets much more beautiful in the desert and then the final area, too. Those are the best areas. Like, that's the best part of the game. You have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
Total side note, random prediction. I could absolutely see Horizon Zero Dawn 2 being a launch title for PS5, whether that's like fall 2019 or fall 2020.
Yeah.
Like, the timing pretty much works out. That would be a big heavy hitter they could lead with on the new box.
Good for Guerrilla, right? I mean, I always thought Killzone was just kind of so-so as well. I never really loved any of them.
Kudos to Sony for giving them the creative freedom to let them pitch something new and try something new and not just fold them up or say, okay, well, that didn't work, so you're going to make this now because we need this. This box checked in our portfolio. They said, hey, come bring us a new idea, and they did, and they were empowered to run with it, and they made a great game.
Yeah, it totally pulled me back in. I'm having a great time playing it. I do wish, however, and do you know what I'm going to say?
That you could climb everything?
No, I was talking about this with Justin. I wish I could glide. Because I get high up and I'm on top of a mountain and I'm like, well, now I have to walk down this mountain?
Mm-hmm. Everyone talks about the climbing in Zelda, the gliding.
Yeah, the gliding.
So
I
underrated.
I want to just be able to glide over this
it's
beautiful valley.
It's the best loop to climb up somewhere and be like, what's that? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go check it out now.
Yeah, that's actually what I really miss from Zelda. I wish I could add gliding into it.
You see some little glint in the distance? Yep. I'm just going to hop on over there and see and climb back up somewhere else tall. Or just like sometimes there's like a Stalfos, he comes up out of the ground. I'm like, peace out, bro.
Yep, later, dude.
Out of here.
That's what I've been playing. Why don't you guys share with the listeners what you guys have been playing? Ryan.
I just reviewed Batman The Enemy Within.
That's right, episode one?
Episode one. So it's season two of Telltale's Batman game, first episode. Super liked it. I liked the first season a lot because it's unapologetically M-rated. It's pretty brutal at times, and it just takes some very established characters from the franchise and just does completely crazy things with them that for the most part pretty much worked. And season two kind of picks up with those consequences having been played out and sets a lot
do
of
people is it a spoiler what the villains are
In season two?
Yeah.
Well, so the first episode is about the Riddler. The Riddler, I can totally for sure tell you, no spoilers, that it's the Riddler shows back up, comes back to Gotham, and all they tell you is, well, he's just been gone for a while. Everybody thought he was dead. He comes back, and he is the focal point. But he's actually the least interesting character in the episode. Not that he's bad, but it's all the peripheral characters that inform the like way more dramatic, tense decisions. And it's off to a great start. I really am curious to see, excited to see where this season goes.
I didn't get to the first season.
It's good.
I hear it's good. I've kind of felt like some Telltale fatigue a little bit, but
I totally get that. Yeah. But if you're a Batman fan like I am, I think season one is totally worth it.
Cool. They also finally announced Wolf Among Us 2.
Or I know, I can't believe it. Season of that. It's so great. That now we just need Tales series. From the Borderlands 2.
Yeah, it's true. Sam, I know what you've been playing. I don't know if you can share.
I can share that, but that's not what I was going to talk about. You know, I've been playing the Mega Man Legacy Collection.
Two. The second one.
Yep, and there's four games in it. Seven for SNES, 8 for PlayStation, which I love. Mm. I didn't think I'd love it, but I love it. It aged really well. It has really bad anime cutscenes that are hilarious. They're so fun.
The voice acting is perfect in that game.
Dr. Light just flubs lines.
And they left it in.
He just misses a word or says half a word. At one point, this robot boss just cuts off Mega Man and goes, "Shut up!" And Mega Man shuts up.
Yeah.
He's like, sure.
And Mega Man also has the voice of a little girl for some reason.
Yeah, he does. And then every time the dog comes out, Rush, there's a person doing dog sounds, and he goes, and he'll like fly, and they show this one animation with just like barely anything happening. And it's like too long.
It's so good.
It's wonderful. But then the actual game is like Marvel vs. Capcom era, like 32-bit, just like, oh my gosh, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's like sprite work, which I don't remember it looking that like pixelated, but it looks really cool.
You can hold down the button and fire constantly instead of that awful charge shot. I'm very anti-charge shot.
And of course, Mega Man 9 and 10 are immaculate and great.
They're super good. Really, they're not hard as good as 2 or 3. So like that means like the whole collection is not as good as the first collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
It plays. And then I've also been playing the 1977 hit Shark.
You and I we played some Shark at California Extreme. Yep. Have you guys even seen this cabinet?
I've never seen it before. So
it's called Shark. Very primitive. It's 77, you said?
Yeah, it's like
a big cabinet. It's four players. It's black and white screen. And all there is, there's a maze at the bottom and then this open area at the top where this dot is floating around. And the dot is a person swimming.
77's really early.
Yeah, or maybe 76. And then you're a shark mouth. And so four people are just...
But it's like, it's basically, yeah... It's either a C or a U or a backward C or an upside down U.
And that's so you're competing to like get out of the maze, and if you hit a wall, you start over. So you're like carefully navigating a maze, and then you get up and eat the dot.
Yeah, it's a race to get out of the maze and eat the swimmer, and then the person who like gets to 5 first wins. But your controls are just 4 buttons in 4 directions.
Wow.
And the buttons are like they're like smaller than an eraser on a pencil. The buttons have never been used anywhere else. It's I don't know why they chose it. It's just these tiny little buttons.
Old like games like that. Switch D-pad.
Yeah, they just had no concept.
Like, obviously, just that's like a Switch D-pad. It's clunky and primitive, but, like, playable, right? Like,
it was so fun.
Yeah.
But, like why? Like, why those tiny buttons?
There's no music. Yeah. I don't even know if it had any sound.
You know what we missed out on is next to it, they had a shuffleboard machine that was 78. It was a Bally Midway game, and it was black and white. And it worked so well. It was a bowling ball roller. And you go, and it's just like shuffleboard in a bar. You know, you just get up to it, and you can knock off the other one, and you go, dink. That worked really well. And then I've also been playing a lot of 1978's Atari Fire Truck.
Yeah, which we also played. Well. That's a cooperative game.
Yeah, so there's one person drives in front, and one person drives in back.
The fire truck is long, and there's two parts of it, and so the person in front is steering, and then the one in the back has to like keep the back end of the fire truck from like running into buildings.
It's just
and cars
black and white,
stuff.
Top down.
Great.
Simple as possible. It was really fun. And then you have a horn button, and the horn button does nothing except for make a loud horn sound.
And I don't know if it was that game, but one of the monitors we saw, actually, there was a real spider inside the monitor.
Yeah, it was like in someone's
just
garage.
Hanging out
till this
behind
show.
The glass, just there's a just
big
a real spider.
They bring it out. It was like, damn, there's a spider! And it was just like hanging there like a mummified spider corpse in the screen. I played that game later with a friend of the show, Jared Petty, and I don't think he likes spiders. I don't know if he's afraid of them. I'm not going to say that. But he doesn't like them at all.
Oh, no, thank you.
And I showed him the spider, and he was not pleased. Anyway.
Yeah, that's at California Extreme, which is the yearly like arcade
machine. 600 machines. It was really fun.
It's the largest collection of arcade machines on the West Coast or something.
Yeah, ever for that day, I'm sure, right? We played Bad Dudes for a couple minutes. It was boring.
Bad Dudes is pretty good. I'm bad. Justin, what you been playing?
You skipped yourself. I guess you already
did. Well, I was at Horizon.
I am still playing Eternal Card Game.
There you go.
I play it every night. It's actually kind of a problem in the sense that it sucked up all the time.
My daughters are crying.
I mean, all the game time, not all the time period. Like, I have Tacoma that I've been waiting to get into, and I have Pyre that I absolutely adore, but I haven't finished yet because Eternal, man, that game is really, really good. As I've said before, it's half Magic the Gathering, half Hearthstone, sort of the best parts of both. And I played a lot of it on PC, but now that it's on my iPad, that's like the perfect way to sort of lean back and play that game.
I like that game a lot. It's just tough for me. card games I'm currently playing. Hearthstone, Eternal, Elder Scrolls, Legends, the Plants vs. Zombies, Heroes, Shadowverse, Calculords. What else? I guess that's enough for now.
Yeah, so it's like hard, like hard
you don't need it anymore.
It's hard to find time.
Did you guys try the VR game that I have hooked up by my desk? Mm-hmm. That Dan was making a bunch of people play last week.
Oh, was that Lone
Super
Echo?
Hot?
Yeah, Lone Echo.
Lone Echo. Lost
Echo. Did you try that?
Not. Well, yes, I've played it. I played it at some event.
Previously. Oh, cool. And you watched good. A tiny bit of like the tutorial scene. I think yeah. I was playing it, but like you are like freely floating in a spaceship.
Yeah.
And that works really well in VR because you have jets like Tony Stark style.
Yeah.
And then you can also. Yeah, basically, you use the controllers and you
grab stuff for momentum.
Yeah. Yeah, and you pull yourself around. And
I'm so excited to play it.
Perfect.
Like
it's just right for VR.
I feel like almost every VR game is like, this is really cool, but there's always like an asterisk. Mm-hmm. And this is like one of the first VR games that like no qualification or like excuses needed. Like it's just super dope and awesome. Yeah. Like I really want to dive into it.
And you're around this... AI character, a woman who's like you're a robot and helping her, and you go through all this stuff. And it has another one of those things where it's like a big 3D display that you pull out of like the ship, and you can like zoom in and like just like that interface is like so futuristic and cool. And Dan was like, if you stare at her too long, she gets mad at you. I'm like, all right, Dan, how did you even find this out?
Yeah, why are you staring at her? I have been playing one other thing a little bit over the weekend, which you guys will never guess.
Bad Dudes.
No.
He's been playing a lot of GBA Game Boy. Mm-hmm.
I'll give you
a Drill Dozer.
I played that a little bit earlier.
Is it one of those weird Star Wars games only for GBA?
No, I've been playing Bionic Commando
Elite
Forces,
nice. Yeah,
which is the Game Boy Color one, which is cool because they add a female Bionic Commando to the game.
A Bionic Commandress.
Yeah, Commandette. But then... The new feature that really took me by surprise is that certain levels... Do you remember this game?
Yeah.
Do you know this very well? Yeah. Certain levels have a first-person sniper mode.
Whoa.
That it goes into, and it's just like a crosshairs on screen, and then you find the enemies, and then you shoot them, and this huge splatter of blood comes out. I wasn't expecting it at all. It's, like, really violent. And I meant to look up what the rating for that game was on the show, because it's, like... You can kill people in the game in a first-person setting, and blood splatters everywhere. So I feel like
how is it not rated M? Or maybe
ever since that first head explosion with Master D.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's been part of the game. It's part of the series. Get used to it.
Bionic Commando Elite Forces.
Does it tell any story additionally in it?
Yes, there's the same.
Does he marry a different wife arm in it?
not the wife arm. It's the same evil organization from the first game is back, and Super Joe is behind enemy lines, and you have to go and rescue him.
Mm. What makes him so super?
Super Joe.
Is he?
We'll never know.
All right, moving on. The developer of Spelunky, Moss Mouth, which is... Derek Yu created Spelunky, and then he created this... His developer name is Moss Mouth. It announced a new game today called UFO 50 that is a collection of 50 single and multiplayer games.
I love it.
In an 8-bit style.
Andrew Goldfarb, tweet if you're okay.
No, I mean, I also like he also made Aquaria. Like he's every game he's Aquaria, made has been excellent. It was indie Metroidvanias are all the rage.
You swim in?
He was like the first indie Metroidvania.
Wow. I got to check it out.
Pre-Spelunky?
I'm going to double check that was Derek.
I'm
sure it was.
So this is 50
8-bit style games. He's brought on other developers to work with him too. The developer of Downwell worked on some of these games, which I haven't played, but I hear really good things about Downwell.
Sure.
So they explained a little bit more. Was it?
Yeah, there was two of them, Derek Yu and Alec Haloka. I don't recognize
that name. So they answered some questions about the games in this collection today. How big are their games? In general, the games are slightly smaller than commercial 8-bit titles from the 80s. But rest assured, they are full games, not micro games or mini games.
Yeah.
Completing the entire collection could easily take over 100 hours.
Mm-hmm. So is that real? Derek Yu, we trust. Incredible game developer. Again, never made a not hit game. But I'm skeptical. Like, there's no way there's 50 games like the size of Castlevania or Mario 1, right?
Yeah, but he's not saying that. He's saying they're slightly smaller.
Did you play Retro Game Challenge?
Yeah.
I remember that one, yeah. But like, there's seven games.
I'm expecting
on that.
More.
Yeah, but they're pretty full.
Yeah. He says, are the games connected in any way? The story of UFO 50 is that the games were all created in the 80s by a fictional company that was obscure but ahead of its time.
That's cool.
That's great.
They're all connected by a unique 32-color palette and other restrictions we decided on to make them feel more authentic. What kind of multiplayer is available in the collection? All the games will feature a single-player mode, and roughly a third of the games will feature either cooperative or competitive multiplayer modes as well.
That's what I thought it'd be focused on. That seems really cool. It has a version of Shark.
Maybe. What platforms is UFO 50 coming out on and when? We are planning to release the game on PC first in 2018 and then move on to other platforms. We're still deciding on the price, but we want it to be an easy purchase.
I'm so excited.
So there's going to be like 50 games of all different types of
20 bucks style. Probably.
Yeah.
This is like my favorite. I mean, I know he said they weren't micro games, but I love WarioWare, especially for the retro feel of those micro games. And I love Retro Gaming Challenge for this exact reason. Yeah. And then NES Remix. Like, I love the idea of shuffling the 8-bit look and like making a more playable game out of it. So it's really
cool. It's cool. There's a trailer for this collection called UFO 50 out right now. If you take a look at it, there's a wide variety of games, everything from platformers, puzzle games, so looks like some sports games, some turn-based strategy stuff. So it seems pretty cool. It's UFO 50 from the developer.
Do you pronounce
Splunky.
It UFO or UFO?
UFO, yeah. It's not UFO.
SNES or SNES?
SNES. SNES.
Oh. UFO.
It is August now.
Whoa, are you
that
sure?
That was fast.
We're in August now, so it's time.
Here we go.
Check in. We started this last month. Okay. We started this last month with July. We took a look back at the July 92 issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
So that's 25 years
why
ago.
Why 92? Just because it's 25? Or
no, I forget the reason why. Oh, it was because I just happened to be looking through it. We have this old magazine library, and Zelda's out this year. And in the mail section of the July 92 issue, Link to the Past had just come out, and all these people were writing in about Link to the Past. And I was like, well, let's just,
You're supposed to say I was in the archives doing my exhaustive research prepping for the show.
For 20 questions.
Yeah. in Game of Thrones, how do they get the chains?
The maesters?
I actually know the answer to this.
The maesters,
Well, for each thing they learn in their maester school, they get a link. So they get a link for,
like healing or this and that. And so the more they know, the heavier their chain is and the more they're weighed down by their knowledge.
I feel like we should have some chains for all of our knowledge here.
Scoop chains?
But now this is August 92. And the console war, the Great War, was raging at that time. If you guys remember,
console war.
Hold on, we can't look at every single page. But
I love the ads.
I know
the ads. They were the best.
But I want to read you the letter from the editor from Ed Simrad. Does anyone actually know? Simrad. You're familiar with?
I know of him.
You know of him
from the mail. Never met him.
The letter from the editor. The headline is "The System War Heats Up." Says, if you are one of the unfortunate group of players who bought either the Genesis or Super Nintendo game systems last year, you probably are not going to be too glad to hear that your $160 to $200 investment in a system has just been cut in half. Yes, the system war is going great guns, and neither Sega nor Nintendo will give the other company any chance to get a sales edge. Over the past 6 months, the system prices have changed so often that retailers no longer have any idea as to what price to put on their inventory.
Whoa, that's a weird thing to have happen.
As soon as the prices are changed, they have to be changed again and always downward. However, it now looks like the prices have gone about as low as they can, as this last price cut necessitated major changes in the system configuration.
What?
Now with only one controller and no pack-in cart, the systems have apparently reached rock bottom.
Only one packing cart.
But then they redesigned the Genesis.
We don't even get those anymore.
I'll tell you, and that set the standard. I mean, that's from there forward. It was no packing game and one controller from there on out.
That's interesting.
Thanks, Sega.
I didn't realize it was the system wars that we really had to thank for that.
Yeah.
He says,
64 is like that.
While not great for the stores, the players who sat on the fence thinking about upgrading are enjoying every minute of the war. Yes, Chris. So, like, people talk about console wars. This is where it comes from. This Christmas shopping season, when about 60% of the toys are sold, should prove to be one of the best ever for the retailers. They will sell a lot of systems, but not make a lot of money. Still, don't feel too sad for the poor store owners, as everything they will lose on the sale of the system, they will make up, and then some, on the sales of the games. Mm. There are not too many people who believe that a cartridge is really worth $60 to $80. Comerica, for one, has proven with their Aladdin project that good games, albeit 8-bit carts, can be sold for less than $20. I don't remember Comerica.
Or their Aladdin project.
I know Comerica.
You know, really?
They made bootlegs for the NES.
Interesting.
What does he mention in context for?
It sounds like they're a retailer, proven with their Aladdin project.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
That good games, albeit 8-bit carts, can be sold for less than $20.
Well, so maybe it's that's their bootleg like a Babbage's thing. Oh, man, what am I... I'll think of what I'm thinking.
We don't know. Ed continues. Unfortunately, there are losers to this new 16-bit war. With the Super Nintendo at $99, how many older 8-bit NES will Nintendo sell at $79? The handwriting was on the wall about the eventual demise of the NES, though, as most of the licensees have already switched over their R&D efforts to SNES game production. This is 1992. They're still talking about the NES.
Well, remember, there was that system, that refresh, right?
That's like, right at the end.
Yep.
92 or 93.
Crazy redesign on
the
NES.
Top loader.
He says, Sega has to be smiling, though. They have lowered their prices to the point where the NES users now can inexpensively upgrade to another system. Many of those will switch from Nintendo to Sega. Another nice point is that the price war is spreading over into the portable area. This time it is Sega versus Atari. Sega's Game Gear is coming down to $99, and Atari is rumored to be bringing the Lynx down to around the $80 price point. I think it's a very cool system. It was just like, wasn't very portable. Batteries.
Yeah.
So he says, who is going to win this latest war? It is quite possible that nobody will ever really know. Sales figures are provided by the companies and aren't audited. Nintendo claimed to have sold over 2 million systems in 3 months last year. Few analysts believe that number and place the actual amount as about half that amount.
What?
Now they are saying they will sell 6 million more Super Nintendo systems this year. Sega stating they will double their user base. Who is right? We'll have to wait until after Christmas to see. Until then, the one thing that we can count on is that the real winner will be the game players. As for the first time in gaming history, the new systems are actually priced at a point where almost everybody can afford to upgrade.
He says that at the beginning, he said there would be no winners and that it was terrible for gamers. And at the end, it says the gamers will win. No, I mean, the system wars were really serious business back then. Yeah, Nintendo and Sony hated each other. Like, people think,
we should read the book Console Wars.
Like, PlayStation
and Sega.
Like, Jay Harris.
Like, PlayStation and Xbox, like, they're competitors and they hate each other. But, like, they don't. Like, they don't. They just don't the way that Sega and Nintendo did. They were absolutely out to murder each other.
Yeah.
Really funny ads in that issue.
In this month, Out of This World on Super Nintendo got the Editor's Choice Gold Award.
Yeah. The coveted Editor's Choice Award.
This month got an 8998 from EGM. That game was awesome.
How did they get four editors to play every single game all the way through
to completion?
To give it a review.
Each editor's reviews, man, looking back, it's like they're practically tweets. Forward,
really,
like,
they're really
barely
true.
There's like two tweets.
Mm-hmm. I always love the gaming gossip section written
Quarterman.
By Quarterman.
Yeah.
In this issue, he says his rumor is Atari's Jaguar is now ready for full out production with designs for nearly 2 dozen softs now in the starting stages. The machine will take gamers into visual regions previously uncharted by home or arcade games. Can't wait to see this cat in action.
Hey, hold up that Adventure Island ad for the listeners.
This is
just a naked guy Adventure hanging Island. From a bird.
That was. I remember the soundtrack for that game was phenomenal.
Is that for Adventure Island?
That's for Super Adventure Island on the Super Nintendo.
Look how big that magazine is.
Master Higgins.
We're going to page 40 here. The first segment of the Game Doctor, and I don't know if you guys know who this is, but he writes a whole intro and where everyone's supposed to know who the Game Doctor is. And finally the Game Doctor is coming to EGM. And you wrote in questions about gaming hardware and problems. Not like cheats about like
my NES flashes and doesn't play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad Gerard from South Carolina wrote in to say, I am a proud owner of an NES. I only have one major problem. I was playing a game and there were a lot of enemies on the screen. The action on the screen then started to slow down.
Oh, cool. What's wrong with
Can you tell
console?
Me what caused this and why this happened? And the Game Doctor just gives an explanation. The more on-screen objects, the more memory is required to move them around. Most video game systems use what are called sprites as the characters.
What you have to do is you just have to keep it a little bit cooler. So aim a fan at your NES.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You'll see less slowdown.
And then
ice water is good for it.
In the preview section, there's a preview of Ninja Gaiden 4 for Genesis. And that game never happened.
Yeah.
There's no Ninja Gaiden 4.
Does it look good? It looks like an NES game.
It just looks like the 16-bit version of the NES games. But
you know,
I don't know whatever happened.
Few screenshots, they would take a Polaroid photo and just cut it out and then just put it in the light.
Yeah, that's what the screenshots are all really poor quality.
Yeah, they're very kind of bluish, like they're taken on the screen. Hudson Hawk and Hook in the same issue?
In a special advertising segment.
Really?
And then on page 94 is a Super Star Wars preview.
Whoa.
And I wanted to read some of the copy of this. It says, 15 years ago, yes, 15,
Whoa. We
watched The Adventures of Luke Skywalker, who, after receiving a distress call from a beautiful princess, was catapulted into an adventure of almost mythic proportions.
15 years ago.
After more than a decade, we are still enthralled with the Star Wars saga. That's 1992. LucasArts Super Star Wars mirrors the fascination that is still present whenever we see the movies. This is a game, underlined, that plays like a movie, underlined.
So that game was only 15 years after Star Wars, and now we're 25 years away from that game.
Yeah. Super Star Wars makes abundant use of the SNES's Mode 7 capabilities, with plenty of scaling and rotation, the effects of which will definitely make you dizzy. That doesn't
sound
good. I think
there's a picture of a Star Wars Death Star trench run in this that, like, that game did not look like.
Yeah, no.
The gameplay is flawless.
Wow. What an accomplishment.
We don't do previews like this anymore.
Yeah, this is a preview.
Using that?
No.
No. Gameplay.
Luke encounters many strange creatures in his quest to rid the galaxy of the evil empire. In addition, there are bosses at the end of each level that are guaranteed to reduce your life expectancy. Look for Super Star Wars by LucasArts Games. Fight hard and may the force be with you. This is their preview.
Yeah, also the cart was 8 megs.
Write that?
I mean, it sounds like the back of the box.
Yeah, LucasArts VR.
What's in the fact file?
At the time of this write-in, the game was 50% complete.
I'm sure.
The cart size is 8 megs and the number of levels, not available.
Yeah. I'd totally forgotten that previews used to say, like, this game's 85% complete, or this game's only 20% complete.
Japanese magazines still do it. Famitsu still does this in their previews.
So bizarre.
It's great. All right, stay tuned for September, when we will once again check in with what was going on in
System EGM Wars continue.
Back then. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like David from Austin, Texas did. He says, the first time I ever listened to Panic at the Disco was also the first time that I played my favorite game ever, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Now, whenever I listen to Panic's first album, I can't help but think of Knights of the Old Republic. The reaction is strong to the point that when I hear certain songs from that album, I will see specific planets from the game in my head. I also have the same reaction with the first Darksiders game and Ed Sheeran. So my question is, do you guys have any albums, songs, or musical artists that remind you of certain games? And he's not talking about the game soundtrack, just like stuff you were listening to while you played the games.
So many. I
have the same thing that happened to me. So I used to run around in Quake 1 with, instead of...
Quake 1, wow.
Yeah, with... what was it? What album was that? Oh, it was the Metallica Load, the Load album.
Yeah.
That was like the same time and just would... So run around just...
Goes together.
Bragging whatever they were called in Quake 1. I don't even know if they had it was a race of aliens or monsters. Yeah, to Metallica.
Metallica's Load.
I remember the Sonic the Hedgehog era being, you know, the exact era that Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins and everything came on the radio. So, you know, I don't listen to that stuff, but I did in high school, and middle school is when I really remember it from. And I remember Sonic the Hedgehog and those bands. Completely one of the
For me, it's Sega Genesis, high school, and grunge albums. I definitely went through like an angsty phase where I'd sit in my room with the lights off and I'd play Shining Force and Shining Force 2 and listen to stuff. I really remember Hole's Live Through This.
Yep.
I remember listening to that album a lot. And on the other side, I remember listening to Tom Petty's Wildflowers album a lot while I played through those Genesis games.
I got that. I remember when you could get 10 CDs for 10 cents
each? Yeah.
And I just do that over and over again.
And you say, sure, I'll cancel before they charge me the $20
BMG,
CD.
Maybe?
Yeah, BMG. I think there's a couple different
ones. There's a couple of them. Yeah. And you could use them all.
I'm going to game the system.
That's how I'd get those CDs. And I remember at the time, I had a Sega CD player. That was my first CD player.
Me too. Yep.
Yeah.
I listened to music on my Sega CD, so that's
indelibly. I listened to Green Day Dookie in my Sega CD.
Dookie was right there for sure.
What was cool is in the era before in those early CD-ROM gaming days, that was pre-copy protection.
Yeah.
So you could actually take a game disc and put it in a music CD player. Track one was the game, the data track. If you tried to play it in an audio CD player, it would just... it would play, but you'd hear nothing. And then tracks two onward were the tracks to the soundtrack. And I still keep a handful. I have some old school PC games that I still enjoy the soundtracks to. There's this post-apocalyptic taxi combat game called Road Warrior, Quarantine, which had a sequel, Road Warrior, later. Quarantine, that has a great soundtrack. And then the aforementioned Quake 1 was the Trent Reznor.
Oh yeah,
stuff.
No way.
He did the soundtrack for that game. So that's crazy. Tracks 2 onward, I actually brought it in for Eric Sapp, who's a huge Nine Inch Nails fan. One of our graphic designers here, and just said, "Here, just copy. You could go ahead and rip tracks 2 through whatever, because I don't think there's any way to legally give Trent Reznor money to to get that." So,
is it video game music or is it like music?
No, it's music.
Sort of atmospheric.
That's really funny that they had him do that.
Because look up the Quake soundtrack on YouTube, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
It's interesting because now he's like a very successful
Oscar winner.
Oscar winning film soundtrack composer. So.
I never realized I was such a weirdo for always just listening to the game music.
Like, I
know lots of people
too.
That do, but I just never even crossed my mind growing up to be like, I'll just listen to the game music. I didn't even think about turning the TV volume down and playing something else.
That's me today. I almost always will listen to the game music today.
Oh, for sure.
But game music's gotten really good.
Yes.
For the most part. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Colby Snyder. Let the questioning begin.
Where's Colby from?
He does not say.
Oh, see, because if he was from the Midwest, that would inform.
Yeah.
All right.
I think I know the game.
Does your character speak?
I don't think so.
You mean just on-screen text speak, or like words come out of your television?
I hadn't thought about it that far.
Like, because it is.
Yeah.
If you, you can clarify.
I don't have. I think they're both. I think either one. Either.
I don't think either one happens.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Is this a pre-1990 game?
No.
Pre-2000?
No.
All right. So we're past 2000 then.
New-ish game. I mean, not new-ish.
Character doesn't talk. But,
I mean, I think, okay, pre-2010?
Yes.
Okay. We got our decade.
Console exclusive? Is it a console exclusive?
Yes.
It's not a Mac game.
Okay, so we're looking at...
I wasn't here for that, but I heard
we're looking at Xbox, PlayStation 2, GameCube is pretty much...
Well, we can confirm that.
Well, I'm just, we don't necessarily have to go there quite yet. But that's where... I'm turning this way again. I'm making them the same mistake, so...
Yeah. Is this a GameCube generation game?
That's original Xbox, PS2.
I don't think so.
Is this a handheld game?
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
Let's do that.
Okay. So what? It's almost certain
Game Boy Advance
or DS.
Or DS.
Yeah.
Age. Okay. Yeah. I mean, is this a GBA game?
No.
A DS game?
Yes.
Whew. I was so worried that it was going to be.
Is this game about self-betterment?
No.
I like where you're going, though.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Cooking Mama, Brain Age.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, is this game made by Nintendo?
Yes.
That's a big help.
That's 10.
First party DS.
Nintendogs.
Yep. Or
could be.
WarioWare. Nintendogs is a good one. But is that about self-betterment?
No.
through training a pet?
Yeah.
I wonder how my Nintendog's doing now. If I were to turn on that game, would my dogs just be happy to see me?
Yeah. It's a corpse.
Yeah.
It's bones.
My Animal Crossing villagers are furious.
It's just like a grown-up dog and you're not interested anymore.
I'm like, I don't care about you.
Yeah. Are there dogs in it?
No.
Could still be Nintendogs, right? Because there's puppies in it. Are puppies dogs?
It could be Animal Crossing. Because there's some hesitation over whether your character speaks. And I don't know off the top. I don't think you speak. You're a mutant Animal Crossing, right?
Are there sequels?
No.
Oh. So WarioWare and Animal Crossing are out.
WarioWare got sequels. Lots of sequels.
Yeah. There's no.
Oh, they're out. They're out. What didn't get sequels? First party DS game that didn't get sequels.
Advance Wars? Was there a sequel to Advance
Wars? Yeah, there was.
There was. Okay.
Well, but it depends on how Damon. That was the final one. The DS one.
What about Yoshi Touch and Go?
Yoshi's Touch and Go is really good. I really like that game.
Mario 64 DS.
Oh,
I mean, those don't technically have sequels. Does this take place in the
Mario
universe?
Mario Talks, though.
Good question.
Does it take place in the Mario universe?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right, then.
Could be one of those two.
Well, so I don't like. That's a good question because it knocks out Advance Wars and all that weird stuff. But like, now does that include Mario Sports?
Well, that's what I was just thinking. Like, was there a Mario Golf game, Mario Tennis game for DS?
There was golf, but there was a sequel on the 3DS. There may not have been golf.
Is this Star Yoshi?
No.
Mario Universe game.
Is this a remake?
No. That's 15.
Yeah, slow up, slow your roll.
No, but we need. Those are the games that we are asking about.
There was Princess Peach, Super Princess Peach on the DS.
Yep, that's a great one.
Not very good.
Mario Universe.
You know how? So it's like, hey, finally, Peach is on her own adventure,
yep.
And then the game is
emotion based.
Her four emotion powers, like when she's crying, this happens, and when she's angry, this happens. Sexist. It's not great.
It's probably that, or there's also Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga games, but those got sequels.
Those got sequels.
So is there anything else?
I think there's a really good chance it's Super Princess Peach.
Yeah. It would.
Is this a platformer?
Yes.
You play as Princess Peach?
Yes.
Woo!
Super Princess Peach. I don't know if she speaks though in the game. I don't think she does.
I mean, no.
She cries a lot.
She may speak in the way that like Mario speaks a little.
Just like
Princess Peach.
Yeah. Some of the stuff like that. Yeah. I didn't think there's real. That was 2006 when that game came to DS, and I didn't play that one. Even though it got pretty good reviews, like sevens. It's
3 out of 5.
Is that supposed to be Xbox 360?
Yeah, because 360 is 2005.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but this game is supposed to be really easy.
Yeah, I remember. For some reason, I have a vivid memory of that game. I was running a handheld games website at the time, and so you know, I ran the site, reviewed the game, and it was totally like first party Nintendo platformer, and like it's just bland. It's just boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not very interesting. And
just like Pikmin.
And pretty sexist.
Well, hey Pikmin.
Hey Pikmin. Sorry. Yes.
And then one detail that I thought might be challenging is that the developer was Toze, T-O-S-E, but they're like a ghost developer that they never even put their name on their
phone. Yeah, that is weird.
And Nintendo has hired them to work on many, many games over the years. And Shigeru Miyamoto, he's still like the producer on the game, but they hire this like ghost developer to sort of like
farm out the heavy lifting of the development.
They basically do.
Yeah.
And then Nintendo publishes it.
That was a good game to do.
So many good DS memories. Franchises that are just orphaned on the DS.
I would love to have like a really cool Super Princess Peach game. Like, that would be great.
Yeah.
Switch is touchscreen, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why I play my Switch every day, but I don't ever use
it. It's not stylus based anymore. It's nice. Like, just.
Yeah, but I just. It makes me wonder if we could see, like, Elite Beat Agents or, you know, some of that stuff that kind of was gone for a while come back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for the suggestion, Colby Snyder. That was good. You guys got there. Well played, everybody.
It took place in the Mario universe.
Yeah.
And that is all the scoops we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Ryan. Before I let you go this week, I wanted to let you know I have a new song out now. It's a little different than what you may expect from me. It's called Destination Venus, and it's a cover of one of my favorite surf punk songs. Check it out in your favorite music service. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. Clearer.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.